Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Judd Hirschberg back on the program show. Judd is president at White Wave Trading, a trading company and our partner for trading research consulting services at Cedar Gold. He's run proprietary trading groups. He has over 45 years of trading experience. He's developed awesome indicators and a repeatable process-based approach for trading the financial markets. Prior podcasts with Judd have focused on his approach and methodology and also updates on the financial markets. And today we'd like to understand what Judd is currently seeing in the financial markets across asset classes and jurisdictions. Welcome, Judd.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be back.
Great. I thought we'd begin with your overall theme. We were talking a little bit before the show as taking a pragmatic technician approach with confirming indicators. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. I use a repeatable process that's math-based that hasn't changed in 45 years. And we're relationship traders, and this is these screens here are something that my friend and your frequent guest Ira Harris has up on his screens at all times, which are the relationship between the 30-year bonds and the indices, and they can tell you a lot about how a market is moving from point A to point B, and when a market is vulnerable and when it's going to turn again. So I use static numbers that never change. And then I use the relationships to come up with high probability entries and exits.
Great. And can we zoom in on some of those equity bond indicator spreads, as you mentioned, like for the Russell, S&P, and the Dow?
Sure. So, you know, it's interesting that this last break in the S&Ps, which my room caught both ways, was actually not, this is a Wednesday. These pink bars are Wednesdays. So I like to look at markets when they get directionally challenged, is what I like to call it, midweek. It's one of my favorite tools. So these pink bars are Wednesdays.
The midweek shuffle.
The midweek shuffle. So one of the guys in the room had a monster trade. He'd been last week, he was short the Russell and long the gold. It was just a huge trade. Made 100 points in the Russell. Let me just put that up. And you can see, you know, it put in a topping pattern the 2nd of July, and you know, it came back up last week again in another failed midweek to rally to nowhere. And Monday, you had a match at the 200 day. Let me just put up Russell Bonds. And Russell Bonds went into the 200 day moving average. But it really wasn't so much the Russell. The Russell on Monday wasn't breaking. You know, it stopped breaking right after the opening. And we were waiting for the S&Ps to bottom. And we picked up that bottoming in two ways. We picked it up off the long-term point and figures. And this is a channel line from last October. So if I expanded this whole thing, this is the channel that the S&Ps have been trading in since last October, and this is the midpoint of that channel. And I throw a cloud over it, and I had a number at 4225. So I knew either it was either going to be 4225 was a low, or it was going to be in the 4180s, high 4180s. So I had confirmation here that we completed the move down. I had confirmation on a shorter time frame, point and figure, that we completed the move down. That was Monday's low. The kicker was that the S&P bond spread, this is short, this is long S&Ps, short to 30-year treasuries, got the stops under the previous month's low and came right back up. Anytime you see that, that's a trap. That's a bear trap. And markets try to go and make higher highs or lower lows and flush directional traders out. As soon as we saw that, all the RIAs in the room covered their shorts. They all covered their hedges. And that was basically the low. It just took 4 or 5 hours for it to finally rally. It didn't rally until the last 10, 15 minutes of the day. Mm-hmm. So that's how we try to put, we try to match up the work. It's just not one thing.
Yep. And are there currently any confirming indicators that give an idea of where we go from here in the near term?
Well, the upside targets haven't changed. I mean, I have a 44, 40 or 50-ish target in the S&Ps, and I have a 15,400 target in the NASDAQ. Mm-hmm. And I know that 1266 or 2266 is going to be hugely pivotal in the Russell, because it has been for the last 6 months, and it will continue to be. So if we look at the Russell going back on a weekly, even a monthly, it's just been gravitating towards this level. It's just been going back and forth. The one of the tells that we used to buy some portfolio insurance was off the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ has a nasty habit of having huge price rejection off of 12,000, then 13,000, then 14,000. And now we came up to 15,000 and we had another rejection off that number. And for whatever reason, markets react to those numbers. And I don't really care why, they just do. I mean, the first time we went up to 14,000 in the NASDAQ, I think we broke 800 or 900 points. You know, this time we only backed off. I thought we were going to get 700 points, and we got 650. So the point is that you're not buying strength into those areas. You know, you just have to be patient to wait for your opportunities to buy.
And what about on the other markets? Like, can we look at the interest rates or bond markets?
Sure. Let's take a look at the 30-year bond. Here's on the monthly. And you can tell I had, you know, I just thought the bonds were sold out down here for a long time. And everybody was telling, you know, was everybody in the media, all they were talking about was the rates are going higher, the rates are going higher, the rates are going higher. Well, the conversation we've been having in my room for the last 4 months is, you know, don't buy it. Because an average move in the 30-year future is 10 points, 10 full bond points. A big move is 20. So we've basically just come from 170, you know, to 153. That's a huge standard deviation move for interest rates.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's spent months going sideways here with everybody selling every single break in the treasuries looking for higher yields. And I think on our yield chart, we were looking at, excuse me, let me see if I can pull that up. I think I was looking at 240 the last time we talked. All right, let me just pull this up. So I just don't look at the futures. We also look at the yields themselves. And the yields spiked over the 200-week moving average, and it never closed above it on a weekly close, which told me that the bonds, you know, the rates weren't going any higher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that kept us out of a lot of trouble. And you can see it here where it went up to the 50-month and just stopped. You know, it got everybody excited right here at a big technical area and failed. Now we have to, you know, now the rates just have to set up again.
Mm-hmm. And can we move to the currency markets, especially look at the U.S. dollar and other major currencies?
Sure. Okay, there's, let's just go to the euro. Where is it? I need another set of glasses, Richard. Okay, so the euro's actually is a little confounding from the standpoint that, you know, it kind of topped the beginning of the June, and as the rates went lower, the euro went lower, which is counterintuitive. So the euro, the Aussie, seasonally, this is a weak time for the Aussie, but right now the Aussie's trying to bottom. I don't know if it bottoms and it's real or not. But it's typically a weak time for the Aussie.
You mean seasonally?
Seasonally, it's a weak time for the Aussie. And you know, an Aussie yen didn't really rally anywhere. So I have nothing to confirm that, you know, that's any more than an oversold bounce in the Aussie. So I haven't been trading the currencies that much. You know, you can see that as the yuan started to weaken, you know, we've had breaks in the beans, we've had breaks in the corn. You know, the beans came off of $16. And at the same time, the yuan started to weaken.
And so the big question is, where do you see the yuan going? And also the risk indicating currencies like the Aussie or, you know, Canadian dollar or Mexican peso?
Well, I think that the yuan is going to go back into a strengthening pattern again. and the peso looks like it wants to, you know, it hit a put in a temporary low today. But it's been, it hasn't been that great of an indicator or a trade. I mean, if you look at a weekly, it's just been pretty much going sideways. And they've got so much that there's so many reasons to buy the peso. And I think, you know, politically, that's the only reason not to buy it. Because they don't seem to be able to get their act together.
And what about on the Aussie currency? You mentioned that it's sort of a, are there any other indicators that can confirm on the Aussie as to which direction it may go?
I mean, the Aussie's been a fair trade against the gold too. For the last month, gold's been gaining on Aussie, and today was really the first day that in a while that the Aussie's gained on the gold. So now the question is, that's got to follow through too.
Yeah.
You know, when we look at some of the other relationships, copper yuan, you know, it's hard to know if this is the start, this is the bottom and start of a risk on demand move or not. So I'm just kind of, there's so many things on the board, so many relationships that have just gone back and forth and are consolidating. And it's been a day to day read. It just hasn't been a sustained move. Mm-hmm. I mean, even, you know, platinum yen's been a hard trade, real hard trade.
Yeah. And what type of indicators could we be looking out for over the next short term, few weeks, that could clearly show, more insight into a trend, a clearly defining trend?
Well, I'm going to keep my eye on the equity bond spreads to see if we can get up and go another 80 points this summer in the S&Ps, or whether it's just going to continue to be a big rangy trade. And seasonally, you know, in another week, most people are on vacation for a month. So markets will be thinner. There'll be less people trading. More algorithmic trading. So you'll get that the trade you'll see will be what I like to, our time frame capital flow trades, where the algorithms either all start buying or all start selling, and that pushes price one way or the other for either a couple hours or a day.
Interesting. And what about in emerging markets themselves for the equity side of things in the emerging markets? Which countries do you like the best?
Well, I think that Germany bottomed yesterday. So, or at least it went to a place where you can control your risk. I mean, we talked about it during the day. Now, whether this is just a little bounce or it's the start of something, you don't know until it gets going. But that was one I looked at. I think it was, you know, Italy, I'm not a big fan of buying, even though that Draghi's running that show. you know, India's trying to shake off their problems with COVID.
What about Brazil and Russia?
Let's see here. Where's Brazil? Brazil kind of rallied to nowhere. and Russia, you know, had a bounce with this rally in the gold. It's actually hanging in there. Consider that gold, or I mean, oil just broke 10%. So if you look at a weekly, it wasn't a bad spot to stop. But I'm not sure that oil's got more to go here. So I guess what I'm saying, Richard, is that right now it's the summertime and you should treat everything as a trade and not an investment.
Yeah. What about on the agricultural commodities, soybeans, wheat, corn?
What looked most interesting to me was the corn. Because I think this has got potential. And I think, you know, you've got a small risk to own corn here to see if it can firm up and go. And some of the farmers and ranchers were talking about it, and will and some of the gentlemen that are in the agribusiness in the room. And I think it's going to be another week before they see how the drought's going to affect the crops over the next week and a half. And I think if there's more dryness, I guess they're going to, you know, we'll see it reflected in the prices again. Mm-hmm. And I'd also keep an eye on it because let me just pick up this other. Let me see if I can pull up this other page. I want to show you the, see if they come up. All right, Richard, let's go to, let's look at the relationship spreads in the grains. Mm-hmm. This is okay. Ira Harris 101. You know, let's see who's buying it and where the demand is and how it's priced in different currencies. I haven't looked at these in a little bit, but you can still see that the beans denominated in real have bottomed again. The end of June. See if they start up again. Let's just go out the other time frames. You got to see it, and they've had a hard time in Brazil with drought. So that's why I like to just go through and see if something sticks out in these different relationships. It's beans. Right. Here's the corn in real. So the corn, even in real, you would expect it to come back up at some point, you know, another 20, 30 cents a bushel. And what you see here, these are deliveries. When one month goes off and another one starts up, you know, you have a new contract that's at a discount.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what you're seeing.
Yeah.
There's November soybeans denominated in yuan. And they give you some really nice buying opportunities off of this chart. You know, soybeans in yuan for 200 day. You had a big rallies. came back down to the 200, another big rally. Here again, that was, I think that was one of the crop reports, another huge rally. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice tool to look at. And, you know, it's got some more work to get going here. But depending upon what happens the next couple of weeks, you know, we could see higher grain prices into the fall. So this has been a big trade, a really big trade. You know, this is corn in yuan. So that is a very big sell-off in there. Now it's trying to form up again. And that is the difference in contract months. And there's September wheat in yuan. So here's another example of the wheat bottoming, and you're seeing demand in yuan term as well as the wheat itself. So when you see them both line up and you see it line up denominated in other currencies, right, it confirms the direction for you. It's mm-hmm. just not one thing. It's telling you, you can see the level, basis real or basis yuan. And then you can have you can execute your thesis off of that. Yeah. The one thing that we were looking at were the oats. And if you look at the oats, this has been a huge move back up here. Mm. That's a 20-year look at that.
Yeah. Wow.
So now the question is that all there is? And it rejects up here and comes back down again, and all the other grains come with it? Because the oats have been leading everything. And Ira points out is that seasonally, this isn't a strong time for the oats, and they've been strong. So this is just one more thing where I like to look at the relationships across the entire complex.
Yep. Okay, great. And the last question would be like on your sector analysis view. Do you see any sectors that are particularly attractive, like on the industrials or transports, railroads, the tech sector, or the COVID trade sector, if you will?
I just think it's a rotational trade. You know, 2 weeks ago, it was the utilities that gave you the heads up. You know, the beginning of July that the board could possibly change. And that's because the utilities were so strong, and it's basically defensive. That's when we started looking more deeply at the equity bond spreads. Mm-hmm. And you can see where it broke down from right here. You know, I'm simple when it comes to targets. All I'm looking for is to see where if something bottoms, it wants to go back to where it broke down from. And it went there. Okay, so now we're going the other way and the equities are going up. And to me, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, the industrials are at resistance. and I have to see if they can follow through. They're trying to put in, you know, a bottoming pattern on the week. And if they do, I'd say you want to be in the industrials. And I think the XLK is trying to do the same thing. You know, it's a pretty good pattern in tech. So I'd be looking for more upside there. And if this pattern holds true, then I just think you get a lot of volatility in August because the lack of market participants, the people either taking their kids back to school or trying to get out of Dodge for a vacation.
Yeah.
And then I think we're going to get another new game late September.
Okay. Great. So yeah, maybe we can touch base at that time when it becomes more clear, mid-September or something like that.
I mean, usually, you know, the one point I'd like to make is that this quarter in the S&Ps was the most unusual quarter end into the new quarter that I've seen in 45 years. And I even asked Ira about it. That if he ever remembered a quarter end where you didn't get the back and forth before it went. This is the first quarter I can remember where we took off before the beginning, going into the new quarter, and we just went. Mm-hmm. So it was this was not a usual occurrence. This is the first time I've seen this type of price movement in 40 years. And since the S&Ps in 1982. And I was there for the opening of that.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
So that, you know, that's why I'm a little cautious, because the board is changing a little bit and I'm seeing things I haven't seen in 40 years.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Well, great. That's been insightful discussion, lots of analysis. How can our listeners learn more about your work and become a subscriber?
You can go to whitewavetradingstrategies.com and just put your name and email in. You get a 30-day free trial. You'll get an invitation to a live room every day where you'll have fund managers, RIAs, and global macro traders from all over the world that all participate in a live forum. It's fabulous.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Judd. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Richard. It's always great.